Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Monday, May 3rd, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed the weekend. Title of today's podcast, Priced Out of Housing. We're going to take the time to read an article out of Business Insider. There are several of them circulating throughout the internet today on this topic of being priced out of housing. And this is just continuing the thread of the narrative of lumber prices and other building materials that continue to skyrocket and just having these downstream effects on all of these various markets. And millennials, that is the generation that might suffer the most. Gen Z, maybe not so much, but they're going to be affected by this as well. And our policy officials, they can't connect the dots. They can't figure it out that the policies that they have been implementing over the past year and continue to do so are the causal effects. Not correlation, they are the causal effects. When you print this money out of thin air, this is what happens. Printing money, expanding the money supply, is inflation by definition. Now, to the layman, well, they like to say, well, it's an increase in prices. Well, you're seeing that too. That's the effect of inflation. That is the effect of increasing or inflating the money supply. And we're going to get to it here because this all ties in with what Uncle Sam did, all that funny money that they gave you, all that sit down and shut up money. We're going to see exactly where it goes. And a lot of other people like to put it as, well, okay, well, this is inflation. It's too much money chasing too few of goods. And that's another way of looking at it. That is why we continue to see upward price pressure on so many commodities. Yes, there are supply shortages. Yes, there are supply chain disruptions that are continuing due to the trade wars before COVID-19. And then obviously because of the restrictions and the shutdowns globally, you continue to have a lot of supply chain disruption. So you have this double, triple whammy that has been in effect for a long time. And the argument by at least the Federal Reserve and company is all of this is just simply going to be transitory. We will get back to quote-unquote normal, even though normal was insane, completely unsustainable. But that's what they're trying to get back to. And they're just going to say, okay, we're just going to have to deal with some of these base effects. Everything was so weak and numbers were so low last year, so things might look a little bit higher this year, but that's just going to be transitory. And we have an inflation target here at the Fed of 2%. Well, we've been below 2% for several years. This is, of course, hogwash, but these are the numbers. This is the official data that comes out. So we've been below 2%. So it's okay if we run hot, meaning above 2% for a little bit, and it'll sort of be symmetrical and we'll be perfectly fine with that. How do they know inflation is going to be transitory? They don't know. They told us that subprime was going to be contained. Okay, that was Ben Bernanke. Subprime was going to be contained. It wasn't. It was systemic. It was global. Okay, so much for that analysis and forecast. Janet Yellen saying there will never be another financial crisis in her lifetime. Well, Dingbat has now been promoted to the Treasury Secretary. So congratulations, Dingbat. And now she's out there saying that all of this spending is not going to cause inflation. It is not going to be inflationary because it's spread out over time. Ladies and gentlemen, this woman, our Treasury Secretary, Janet Dingbat Yellen, could not forecast that she would hit water if she fell out of a boat. That is how bad these people are. And of course, she got paid hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars in aggregate once she left her post because she was the former chair of the Federal Reserve before Jay Powell. She went on a speaking tour to all of the banks and financial institutions that she used to regulate as the chair of the Federal Reserve. But there's no conflicts of interest. Have you ever seen this woman? Have you ever heard her voice? Nobody's paying this woman $100,000, $600,000, whatever she got paid per speech to listen to her talk eloquently about some topic of which she knows nothing. They're paying for access. I don't know how well known this is in the public, but this is just another piece of evidence in the never-ending thread of evidence that we get here on a daily basis of the conflicts of interest of the fox in charge of the hen house. Whatever analogy you want to use, use it. They take us for suckers. They take us for fools. They take us for idiots. They come out and they have the audacity, the nerve, to come out and say all of this spending, all of these policies are not going to have an inflationary effect. When, by definition, that is exactly what all of this is. Now, they're fine, most of these people. They got big portfolios. They got big money. They're getting paid for books, for speeches, yada, yada, yada. They don't have to deal with everybody else. This is part of this massive income and wealth inequality that we continue to experience. And this almost always leads to political and social decay, which we're already in the process of anyway. But that's what I like to do here on this podcast, is talk about that intersection of economics, politics, / policy, and social issues. Because they're all connected. And all of these things are coming to a head. And I think we already would have been there with a lot more attention, as much as there already is in this country and more is building. I think we already would have come to this eruption, if you will, had it not been for this massive spending and printing operation to fill the void, to give people their sit down and shut up money. Because we now have about a third of personal income across this country on average, a third of personal income now comes from the federal government. That's how big these transfer payments have been. That's what it constitutes, about a third of personal income. This is a banana republic, ladies and gentlemen. We are being conditioned, as I have been stating here for over a year, we are being conditioned with this funny money, with these stimmy checks, to just get used to universal basic income, get used to modern monetary theory. Now, of course, the vast majority of people never heard these terms, but nonetheless, a good deal have. You had some presidential candidates talking about this in the election up to 2020, and it continues to be discussed here and there. But that's what all of this is. It's just a big conditioning. You don't have to go to work like we talked last week. That's what our president told us last Wednesday in his address to a joint session of Congress. You don't have to choose between a job and a paycheck. You don't have to. You just, you know, you don't want a job, don't worry about it. We'll send you a paycheck. If there's something you like to do, go ahead and do it, if you can find it. Unbelievable. But getting back real quickly to the CPI figure, inflation, that's calculated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This would have been another fantastic question to ask Jay Powell. I don't think I've heard anybody ask him this question, at least not yet, but I hope it gets asked. We were lucky last week. The journalists, the financial media was finally starting to press Jay Powell a little bit, because I just think the environment is so absurd, it's so obvious that you cannot not ask these types of questions. You have to push him finally, okay? But one other question that I would love to hear him answer, or just to see his facial expression, is to ask him, hey, Mr. Chairman, you said a few months ago when the official unemployment rate was at 6.3%, you said, we don't think that's actually correct. We think it's the real unemployment rate is closer to 10%. Now, I said at the time, that's big news, because the Federal Reserve rarely, if ever, comes out and questions official government statistics, okay? And that's why I continue to bring this up to the audience, because to me, that's big news. That's something to pay attention to. And it goes to show that they are trapped, that they just need to continue to spin their web of lies to continue to justify their narrative, and their narrative is to continue to print more money at any cost. So, Mr. Powell, The Bureau of Labor Statistics also calculates CPI, inflation. If we're not to trust them with the unemployment rate, then why are we to trust them with the inflation figures? Aren't you really just cherry-picking data to fit a narrative? And what narrative are you trying to spin here? I would just love him to take a stab at that question, and I would hope somebody would ask that question. Because again, it's commonsensical. It's not disrespectful in any way. That's just an observation. This is what the man has said. So it's in the same department, same bureau. They calculate one thing, you say it's wrong, what about the other? And this week, this Friday is going to be the first Friday of the month, so we will get the official jobs report for the month of April. And don't forget, last week, last Thursday, when we do our traditional data dive and we look at the initial jobless claims figure, but we still have about 16.6 million Americans claiming some form of unemployment insurance, which gives us a de facto unemployment rate of about 12%, which is double the current rate, which is currently at 6%. And we'll see what it comes down to or up to this Friday. That is a huge number. And that is also going to play into the Business Insider article when it comes to housing. And we're going to get to that momentarily. So that's just some food for thought. Those are just some questions I want somebody to ask Jay Powell. Very professional, very respectful. Because you used to be data dependent. Now you're just making stuff up as you go. Okay? So just trying to hold these people to account. That's all I'm trying to do here. Market performance, we have the dollar index at 91.15 on the dollar index. It was weaker during the day session. Overnight now, it is putting on a gain of about 0.25% and putting some downward pressure on some of those major cross-currency pairs. Bitcoin is currently down about 2.5% to trade at 50, let's just round up to $56,000 per coin. Overnight futures trading, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the red, down 0.1%. The S&P 500 down about 0.2%. The NASDAQ 100 also in the red, down about 0.3%. It was a choppy day on Wall Street. The Dow and the S&P put on a positive gain. The NASDAQ sold off for the day. A sea of green across the pond in Europe today. Cash trade in Australia putting on a gain of about 0.5%. Chinese stocks down 0.8%. On the commodity price front, we have WTI at $64.37 a barrel. Strong day for oil today. Brent at $67.44. Natural gas at $2.56. So continuing to flirt with that $3 handle. Gasoline, $2.12, hitting a 7-week high. And if we have people ready to go, because I'm sure a lot of people are excited to get out, start to enjoy the nicer spring and summer weather that's ahead of us. People are going to start driving. We have supply shortages with gasoline. We have perhaps supply shortages of labor when it comes to truck drivers who are going to transport gasoline. So that's going to be problematic as well. So anticipate some type of spring price hike in the price of gasoline. Gold and silver both had very strong days today, but both are pulling back overnight. Gold is at $1,787 an ounce. Silver is at $26.73 an ounce, flirting with that 27 handle. Both are looking good on a technical basis. And if these precious metals start to decouple from the narrative that has been for the past several months with interest rates and what the bond market is doing, if we see a decoupling, then we could be on a good ride here with both gold and silver. Copper is at $4.52 per pound. And lumber, $1,575. I'll repeat, $1,575 per 1,000 linear board feet. We're going to get to that article here in a second. And then to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note, 1.6%. So still consolidating where it has been for the past week, week and a half or so. So onward to this article. Just a few months ago in February, The National Association of Home Builders, the NAHB, released shocking data about how the historic appreciation in lumber prices was crimping the housing market. A new build was $24,000 more expensive on average, and we covered that. That's a big number, $24,000. 3 months later, meaning today, that number now stands at $35,872. Let's round it up to 36,000. That is a 50% increase in only a few months' time. Priced out of housing. You get it? The housing market took off last summer as the pandemic enabled many to work from home indefinitely. And with mortgage rates so low, many people rushed to buy new homes. But the pandemic shut down lumber production, and it hasn't kept pace with building since. Quote, this unprecedented price surge is hurting American home buyers and home builders and impeding housing and economic growth, NAHB Chairman Chuck Falk said in a statement. Quote, these lumber price hikes are clearly unsustainable. Are they, Chuck? We're going to find out. Policymakers need to examine the lumber supply chain, identify the causes for higher prices and supply constraints, and seek immediate remedies that will increase production, end quote. A report from the NAHB in February said the lumber supply chain impact came as factories shut down almost immediately last March for safety reasons, and then as demand spiked, supply couldn't keep up. Lumber prices have jumped by 340%. 340% compared to last year. Say it with me, gang, but there is no inflation. That's what they tell us. Insider reported on March 26th that because lumber prices are so high, home builders have been building fewer homes and intentionally raising prices to keep up with the high demand for houses amidst the low supply of lumber. In addition, a report from Redfin, a real estate brokerage, found that the average home sale price hit an all-time record in March, increasing 16% year over year to $331,590. And with about one in three homes being sold for more than the asking price in the month of February. When the pandemic is over, purchasing a home is going to cost much more than ever before. This is according to the chief economist of Redfin, putting home ownership much further out of reach for many Americans. That is exactly it. That is exactly the point why today's podcast is titled Priced Out of Housing. I'm going to repeat this. When the pandemic is over, purchasing a home is going to cost much more than ever before, putting home ownership much further out of reach for many Americans. That means a future in which most Americans will not have the opportunity to build wealth through home equity, which will worsen inequality in our society. The chief economist of Redfin hits it right on the head. Which will worsen inequality in our society, which will give way to political and social issues. Because the millennials are the largest demographic. I think we're slightly bigger than the baby boomers. Younger people are going to want a bigger say in government policy, and they are not liking what they are getting. We talked about this last week, a couple weeks ago maybe. There is a big trend on Google search for people looking for when is the housing market going to crash? When is the housing market going to crash? People know this is out of control. And they're just waiting. Some of them, if they can, some of them might not be able to wait, but they might not be able to afford these new home prices either, which is why they're looking it up. When are housing prices going to crash? Nobody has that crystal ball. I think these prices are going to continue to accelerate, at least through spring and summer, probably through the remainder of this year. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? You're going to continue to see this price pressure on these commodities one after the next. All of these building materials. You still have low interest rates continuing to fuel all of this. You still have people that are going to work from home a lot more than they did before, or there'll be some type of hybrid. so they don't need to live in the cities. But even with that being said, just the fact that the price of lumber is up, it's increasing the value of other properties. So, for instance, the NAHB is also stating that because of this upward price pressure, you have apartments and landlords, property management companies, are going to be charging their tenants an additional $120, about $120 per month. Okay? Well, Uncle Sam just gave you a check for what, $1,200, whatever it was? There it is. Gone. Right away. You see how this works? There is no free lunch. I talked about this from day one, from the get-go. Before they even signed the Nobody Cares Act 1.0. Before that, there was even ink to paper. I was warning this audience that something like that, like the Nobody Cares Act, was coming down the pike. Representation and recourse, you can find that article on thecapitalnews.com. You can find the podcast on our YouTube channel. Representation and recourse. That they were going to be completely unhinged, they being the government. And of course the Federal Reserve too, because they're the ones that had to finance all of this shenanigans. Also did a podcast last year in the same vein. Free was never so expensive. Check that one out too. It's not that hard to look over the hill to see what's coming when they implement these types of policies. It's not that difficult. There's no free lunch. Once you understand what that means, you can connect all of these dots. It's really not that difficult. We might not get every single detail right. Nobody is going to. But you can paint a vivid enough picture to understand what's going on, why, and what's likely going to happen next. Just by taking a breather, taking a step back, a deep breath, and saying, all right, what are they doing? Why are they doing it? And what's likely going to happen as a result? But you have to remove yourself from the mainstream media. You have to remove yourself from MSNBC, CNN, Fox, Bloomberg, CNBC, all of it. Because they're all pushing a narrative. They all want you to think what they're saying. What they are saying is a bunch of nonsense. That's why you have to think for yourself. You have to be an independent thinker. And that is in short supply in this country. And it is not doing anybody any favors. Okay? Believe me when I tell you. So here's continuing with this article here. Insider's Hillary Hoffauer reported on April 30th that the pandemic and the lumber shortage are combining to put home ownership out of the reach for many, but especially the millennials entering their prime home buying years. Fairweather, who was the chief economist out of Redfin, Fairweather said the housing shortage is leaving millennials boxed out of the housing market. And that's exactly right. That is exactly what's happening. This is obviously having economic consequences, and it will translate into political and social consequences in the not too distant future. And as we discussed last week, with the Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price Index hitting an all-time high at 238.8 on that index, and just for reference, back in July of 2006, its previous, obviously the peak before the Great Financial Crisis, it was at 184.6. Okay, so a big increase over the past 15 years. All right, and the year-over-year change with these home prices, again, this is the National Home Price Index, but we're also seeing all-time highs with their 20-city composite and their 10-city composite. We discussed this last week, so you can check that out. But the year-over-year change is at 12%. And we haven't seen this type of yearly increase, going back to 2006. And I think, as I stated earlier, this is going to continue. We'll continue to see this. We'll continue to see people leaving the cities. We'll continue to see people wanting to go to the suburbs, wanting to buy a house. Again, the millennial generation is huge. Younger people want to buy a home, starting a family, what have you. But they can't do it. They can't afford to do it. Student debt, lack of job opportunities, whatever the case may be. And of course, you see a lot of help wanted signs out there. But why do we see that, right? Even in this article, you have a shortage. What's going on with supply chain? Where's the labor? Why aren't these people going back? Well, because they're being paid to stay home. We are being conditioned to accept universal basic income. People are making the same. They're making more. Even if they're making less, they might say, well, hey, I might be making a few dollars less, but I don't have to work. I don't like my job. I don't like my colleagues. I don't like the customers. I don't like the clients. I don't like my boss. I don't like the traffic. Blah, 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 blah. I don't like the commute. So, I might have lost a few dollars an hour here or there, but you know what? All comes out in the wash at the end. I'm happier staying home, doing what I want to do. Don't have to go back. Don't have to go back because the government's going to continue to send me money until at least September. Depending on your situation, you have student loan moratoriums. You have forbearance. You have forbearance on rent, perhaps. You have forbearance on mortgages, perhaps. Yeah, so, hey, you're living a good life, right? So we're going to witness, obviously, what happens once these checks stop coming in, if they stop coming in, because the Democrats are still in control of Congress, still in control of the White House, still trying to push through trillions of dollars more in spending, want to raise taxes, which, of course, I predicted was going to be the case back in 2019 when this podcast came online, because you cannot run trillion-dollar deficits and expect not to pay for it. Again, there is no free lunch. Once you understand this, it's very easy to see. It was not the strongest economy ever in 2018, 2019. You do not have trillion-dollar deficits if you have a strong economy. You have surpluses when you have a strong economy. Think about yourself personally. Always take it back to the simplest level if you can. Would you say you are in a better position if you had $500,000 in savings, a surplus, or if you had $500,000 in debt? Net-net. Okay? What position would you rather be in? You'd rather have the $500,000 in savings. It's a no-brainer. That's a strong balance sheet. We don't have a strong balance sheet. We have trillion-dollar deficits. We're going to spend $8 trillion this year alone. $8 trillion. We only bring in $3.5 trillion. Our deficit's going to be $4.5 trillion. What that means is we are borrowing 55 cents out of every dollar that we are spending. 55 cents. That is completely ridiculous. And to me, it's completely immoral and unethical because this just stymies and kills future growth and prosperity, which belongs to younger people and younger generations. But that's not happening. All of that future growth and prosperity is being stolen from the future, being brought back to today to fill a void. And it's all being done not with production, not with savings and investment, but it's being done through the printer, the printing press. We are a first world banana republic. If this was the panacea, why did it take us so long as a species on this planet? The printing press is not new. Why did it take us so long to figure this out? All you got to do is print money and there are no negative consequences. That's what they would have us believe. Now, of course, that is complete nonsense. And we are witnessing the effects of these policies. And even Jay Powell last week admitted, because again, finally, some people had some balls and asked some questions. What do you say about these home prices? Pricing out a generation, perhaps. It's like, yeah, that's true. That's going to hurt some young people. That's going to hurt first-time home buyers. Well, what are you going to do about it? You're the cause for this. And then somebody asking a nice question, same question we've been asking here for quite a while, with home prices where they are, and with everybody saying housing is back and everything's perfect, why does the Federal Reserve continue to purchase $40 billion per month in mortgage-backed securities? Why do they continue to do it? They did that during the Great Financial Crisis because that was the Great Financial Crisis. At the center of it was housing. Now, it wasn't right to do it then, but at least you say, okay, well, they're trying something new. All right, it's justified, blah, 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 blah. Not in my opinion, but that was the narrative people bought into it. Why are you continuing to do it today? That was an emergency policy. We're not in an emergency anymore. We got housing prices all the way up. Housing prices were down then, they're up now, yet you continue to do it. These people have no credibility, but nobody holds their feet to the fire. Because politicians love it. On both sides of the aisle. Believe me, both sides of the aisle. You don't have the conservatives outraged with $1 trillion. Well, you kind of do now because they're no longer in power. They were running $1 trillion deficits. They didn't care then. Soon as they lose power and the Democrats run $1 trillion deficits, oh no, we can't have this. We're fiscally conservative. Yeah, stick it up your you-know-what. I'm tired of listening to these people. Leave them if you haven't already. Leave them. You should be disgusted by this two-party system. You should be disgusted by both of them. Okay? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You cannot justify what these people do. You cannot justify what these people say. They do not deserve your respect nor your vote. Give them neither. They need to go. They all need to resign. All of them. Every last one of them. Even people who were newly elected for the first time. Everybody needs to go and send the message. Send the message that we have to put our country first. We're not getting anything done. And the things that they are getting done are terrible for the country, especially the longevity of our nation, because we just continue to push more and more problems onto younger people. And a lot of the idiots in Congress, they ain't going to be around much longer because they're late 70s, 80s. I mean, come on. Come on. They don't know what's going on. Yet they continue to reap all of the benefits of their policies. So there you have it. You're priced out of housing. Younger people are dealing with the consequences of all of these fantastic policies that we're told are leading to the greatest economic recovery in human history. It's a bunch of nonsense. It's not how it works. We have these twin deficits, our federal deficit, budget deficit, and our trade deficit. We're not producing stuff here in this country. That's why we're buying everything from overseas, but they're producing. Somebody else is producing. We're buying that excess production. And then they want to cheerlead that. And they say, oh, everybody's back. The consumer's back. Well, the consumer's back when they get a stimulus check. Then those numbers tank. Then Uncle Sam sends another stimulus check. And then the numbers go back up. Wow, couldn't figure that one out. What happens when you take all of this artificial liquidity away? The system implodes, folks. This is a game of smoke and mirrors. And just think of all of these poor people who have purchase these homes at these outrageous prices. And of course, people are contending with corporations. They're contending with pension funds, hedge funds, private equity. That's why you're getting all these all cash buyers. But just think of all of these people who are just going to be completely wiped out once this housing market does revert to the mean, when it does come back down to a realistic level. I think that's still going to be a while away. But nonetheless, these people are going to be underwater. And we have that triple whammy underway right now that led to the Great Depression, that led to the dot-com boom and bust, and that led to the great financial crisis. So I just don't see any good way out of it. I want market forces to handle it. That's not going to be a pretty picture, but I think it'll be the most effective and efficient means of doing it. We just need leadership to sort of guide people and prepare them for what's happening, but that ain't going to happen either, unfortunately. But there you have it. That's the podcast for this Monday, May 3rd. Thank you so much for joining me. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I'm Alex Caritas. Godspeed.